Thank you, Joan. Thank you, Sarah. This series we've called Famous and Forgotten, and we started with David. That's an easy one. He's famous. We even talked about David and Goliath. That's one of the stories that we start studying from our earliest days. So it's hard to forget about David. Last week we said that Rahab might be kind of in between. Now, we may have learned about Rahab, had her a little bit in our mind, but Rahab's story is probably about half famous and about half forgotten. This week I'm guessing these five women are completely forgotten. And that might even be a generous statement. If they're forgotten, then that implies that at one time we learned about these five women. These five women that we've probably never heard of before. Mala, Noah, Hogla, Milcah, and Tirzah. They are the daughters of Zelophehad. Zelophehad had five daughters. Let me give you a little bit of context before I read. Remember, we are at the period of time where Moses has led the Israelites out of captivity in Egypt. They came to the edge of the Promised Land the first time, sent spies into the Promised Land, and the spies brought back a daunting report. Well, all of the spies except two, Caleb and Joshua. And as a result of their disobedience, of their not believing in what God had promised for them, they turned around and they went into the wilderness for 40 years, 1 year for every day that the spies were spying out the land. It's not a time of wandering in the desert. It's a time of preparation, of getting ready. It's actually a time of judgment. During those 40 years, God says this generation is going to pass away, and we will come to the edge of the Promised Land again in 40 years with a new leader, Joshua, and a new generation of people. That was what we looked at last week with Rahab. Well, what happened during those 40 years, they're getting ready to come back to the edge of the Promised Land. And when you have a transfer of leadership, like from Moses to Joshua, or when you're getting ready to do something new, like coming into the Promised Land, they take a census. And the census is reported in the book of Numbers. I don't know if you ever put that together, but that's why the book of Numbers is called Numbers, is because it's all about the census that they took when they were getting ready to come into the Promised Land. And we learn in this census that a guy named Zelophehad had no sons. He only had daughters. And so when he passed away with that generation, it created an issue. Because under the current rules, the estate was supposed to go to Zelophehad's brothers. Instead of being passed down to his daughters, since he had no sons, his estate was going to go back up and over to his brothers. That means that the daughters, all five of them, are left with no inheritance. And so they go and bring their case to Moses. And that's what I'm getting ready to read in chapter 27. The daughters of Zelophehad bring their case before Moses. Then drew near the daughters of Zelophehad, the son of Hephner, the son of Gilead, son of Machir, son of Manasseh, from the clans of Manasseh and the son of Joseph. The names of his daughters were Mala, Noah, Hogla, Milcah, and Tirzah. And they stood before Moses and before Eleazar, the priest, and before the chiefs and all the congregation at the entrance of the tent of meeting, saying, "Our father died in the wilderness. He was not among the company of those who gathered themselves together against the Lord in the company of Korah, but died for his own sin. And he had no sons. Why should the name of our father be taken away from his clan because he had no son? Give to us a possession among our father's brothers." Moses brought their case before the Lord. And the Lord said to Moses, "The daughters of Zelophehad are right. You shall give them possession of an inheritance among their father's brothers and transfer the inheritance of their father to them. And you shall speak to all the people of Israel, saying, 'If a man dies and has no son, then you shall transfer his inheritance to his daughter. And if he has no daughter, then you shall give his inheritance to his brothers. And if he has no brothers, then you shall give his inheritance to his father's brothers. And if his father has no brothers, then you shall give his inheritance to the nearest kinsman of his clan, and he shall possess it. And it shall be for the people of Israel a statute and rule, as the Lord commanded Moses. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I want to introduce this by telling you three stories. The first story was from several years ago. It was actually Miss Claire's first day here at Westminster. That day in worship service, we prayed, we commissioned her, and then she and I, along with some number of kids, I can't remember, hopped on the church bus and were on our way to Montreat. The faithful church bus died in Orangeburg. We've since gotten rid of the faithful church bus. This is Claire's introduction to ministry, stranded at a McDonald's in Orangeburg. But it's okay, because I picked up the phone and I called my parents. My parents live in Orangeburg, and I said, I have an idea. They said, what's your idea? I said, my idea is for you to give me your vehicles this week. Somehow my parents, between the two of them, have enough seats that we could sit, me and Claire, driving the vehicles and the rest of the youth group. And I remember a long time what my dad said, we've got you covered. And they drove their vehicles up right away. We were having lunch for an hour, and we were on our way without any loss of time. And the reason why is because I have people who take care of me in Orangeburg. Here's another story. A couple years ago, Lauren and a friend were following each other from Charleston back up to Presbyterian College after a break. Lauren called and said, something's wrong with the car. I said, what's wrong with the car? She said, it won't go. I said, where are you? She said, I'm on the side of the interstate. I said, well, you got to get somewhere safe. Why don't you just pull up to the next exit? And she said, no, the car won't go. I said, oh, well, what are you going to do? Well, we can put all our stuff in my friend's car and we can be on the way. I said, that sounds great. Do that. And then I had to figure out what to do with a broken car that won't go on the side of the road, thankfully, up near Orangeburg. So I called my brother and I said, here's the position of the vehicle. I need a transmission shop. And without looking anything up or Googling anything, he said, well, on that side of Orangeburg, you can go to either AJ's or Hutto's transmission, and either one of them will be just fine, but you can decide which one you think is a better transmission shop on that side of Orangeburg. I said, man, I appreciate it. I can't believe you know that. And he said, don't worry, I've got you covered. And I learned again that I have people who take care of me in Orangeburg. This last week, story number three, Amy is on the way to Prosperity to pick up her mom, who is visiting with us this week. And she called me in from Orangeburg. I was in a meeting with somebody, so I don't answer the phone unless she calls back right away, and that's our little signal. You better pick up, buddy. And so I picked up the phone. What's going on? She says, where is my tire gauge? I said, your tire gauge is in my van. And she said, why is your tire gauge in your van, my tire gauge in your van? And I, that's kind of a side story. So she said, the pressure light came on in the car. I can put some air in it, but I see that there's a nail in the tire. What do I do? And I said, hold tight. I called up my brother, my brother's son. I said, here's the situation. And he said, well, just have Amy meet us there at the farm and we'll take care of her. Amy called me back about 15 minutes later, and she was on her way with hardly any loss of time. Remember what my brother said. Don't worry about it. We've got you covered. And I learned again that I have people who take care of me in Orangeburg. Now, I tell you all of that because the daughters of Zelophehad, with the death of their father, are no longer covered. They don't have anybody who will take care of them. And that's the way the system worked at the time that we were reading here, is that Israelites are coming into the promised land. When a daughter is born, she's under the covering of her father and her father's house. When she gets married, she's under the covering of her husband and her husband's house. But if she has no father and no husband, then she has no covering. And it's especially difficult for women in that society because they don't have a standing. They can't just go to technical school, take extra classes, and get qualified to do something. It didn't work like that back then. To be a daughter of Zelophehad who has died means that you have no covering. It means that you are vulnerable. And all five of these daughters are left vulnerable because of what had happened to their father. And so they have an idea that they need to speak to Moses. And it's probably a scary idea because they're not just grabbing Moses after service one day. They're speaking to Moses and the priest and the elders all in front of the tent of meeting. This is a pretty public meeting that they're having with Moses. And I think you need to know that, sure, they are speaking to Moses on behalf of themselves because they do have an identified problem, and they plead their case. You can see that. They say something like, "Our father has died." And I don't understand all of this, but apparently there was some uprising in the wilderness, and they tell Moses he wasn't part of that uprising. Anything that's on his head is his own fault. But why is it that when he dies, his inheritance and his name and his line is over? He has no sons. And the daughters of Zelophehad say, "We don't think that our father's line and his heritage should come to an end." And so they identify a problem, and they also identify a potential solution. "So give us a portion of the estate along with what is going to go to his brothers." I think in their proposed solution, you see that they're not just interested in trying to grab an inheritance. What they're interested in is perpetuating a name. They're interested in perpetuating a lineage. They're interested in, sure, making sure that they have some sort of coverage, but they're not doing it just for themselves. They want to be included among what is going to happen for the brothers. And so they are, for sure, speaking to Moses on their own behalf. But you also need to know that they're not just speaking to Moses for themselves, but they're speaking for the community. You know that this was an issue for many others. If a man had no sons, then his part of the family line ended. There's no male heir to carry on the name, so the estate goes back to the family of origin. That's the law. And this is a period in time when a whole generation is dying off. They just took a census. And so you know that they're not the only ones, but the estate laws in place favor the men and leave the women out. And it's not just unfair from a gender equality perspective, but it is unjust from a survival perspective. It left them, and it left others, with no covering. And so they're vulnerable in the community. So Moses hears the case, and then he speaks to God. And this is my favorite part of the whole passage, where God tells Moses, "You know what? The daughters of Zelophehad are right." It's like two dudes that just never thought about things from anybody else's perspective. God says they are right. And a new estate law is put into place. And I want to read part of it. If a man dies and leaves no son, give his inheritance to his daughter. And if he has no daughter, give his inheritance to his brothers. If he has no brothers, give his inheritance to his father's brothers. This is to have the force of law for the Israelites, as the Lord commanded Moses. I don't want to forget about the daughters of Zelophehad, because they saw an injustice and they used their voice to make it right. They spoke up not just for themselves, but they spoke up for others who were in the same situation, the ones who were vulnerable and had no covering. They took some risks in challenging the status quo. Imagine what that would have been like, these five daughters coming before Moses and all the elders, raising their hand and saying, "We have something we think you need to think about." And I think they are foreshadowing the way of Jesus. Jesus, who is the very embodiment of mercy and justice. And hear this. Jesus, who went before his Father on behalf of ones who were in trouble and had no covering over them. Do you know who I'm talking about? I'm talking about us. Jesus raised his hand and said, "I'd like to plead the case of the ones who have no covering. I'd like to plead the case of the ones who are vulnerable. I'd like to plead the case of the ones who have no inheritance." The life and death and resurrection of Jesus is him speaking up to provide an inheritance for us. What that means is this little story in the book of Numbers is more than a morality call to step up and challenge unjust laws. What the daughters of Zelophehad did here is incredibly and entirely Christ-like. And since it is the pattern of Jesus, it sets the pattern for our work in the world today. Do you know what I was thinking about when Sophie was giving her minute for mission today? That she is a daughter of Zelophehad, because she, along with others, are coordinating the work of Christians who are raising their hand and stepping into the gap for the ones who don't have what they need. And they're not just putting band-aids on situations, but they are explaining, I wrote it down what she said, "We are creating a better understanding of systems that create and perpetuate poverty." They're challenging the systems that exist that keep people impoverished. A daughter of Zelophehad. You know, in a few moments, we're getting ready to ordain and install deacons and elders. We'll ask them some questions of installation and ordination. Here's a question that all of them will be asked. Will you in your own life seek to follow the Lord Jesus Christ, love your neighbors, and work for the reconciliation of the world? Another way of saying it is, will you be a daughter of Zelophehad? The deacons in particular will be asked this. Will you be a faithful deacon, teaching charity, urging concern, and directing the people's help to the friendless and those in need? In your ministry, will you try and show the love and justice of Jesus Christ? Will you be a daughter of Zelophehad? No, I don't want to forget about them anymore. because they get it right. They get it right in what they're doing and what they stand for. They get it right in that they are pointing, probably without any knowledge of it, pointing toward Jesus. And if they're pointing toward Jesus, then that means they are setting the pattern for mission and ministry in the church. Raising their hand and stepping up. To God alone be glory, now and forever. Amen.